Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today, boy, we are going to blow you away today. Today, our guest is Martha Kartawi. Oh, okay. I'm already crying. Haven't even introduced her yet. Wow. Okay. I think you might have beaten the record, Martha. But anyway, Martha is an author, speaker, coach, and event facilitator. And Martha spent 25 years in a cult with her family, where she was starved, beaten, controlled, had her head shaved, her belongings burnt, and was mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually abused. Now, to look at her, you're not going to know all these things because Marcia has been on a journey of healing. But anyway, that's what we want to share with you today. And welcome, Martha, and thank you very much for your generosity.
Hi.
Wow. Well, you don't look like you were beaten and abused. You look like you're glowing. Oh, and I forgot to say, so she should be glowing because Martha's book is Glory Going All In. And it's a cult survivor, from cult survivor to courageous warrior. So she is in that. And it has been 20 years, right? Since you escaped?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So, all right. I know, we had talked about, you know, your family being in it. If you could just give the listeners just a brief history of how your parents started in that and how it, you know, wasn't always that way, all that, like you were telling me. Okay. Thank you.
So I was born and raised in a religious cult for 25 years, as Hillary stated. My parents joined a few years before I was born, in 1975, and they were searching. They were hippies, and there was this movement of really just wanting to belong to something bigger than themselves. And it was a movement all across the United States, and there was all these little evangelistic leaders popping up, and they got wrapped up in one of these movements. And it all began with creating community and creating something that was special and a collective and understanding that, you know, you're more powerful together. And that really appealed to my parents and, you know, just really taking care of one another as a community and as friends, right? And that really appealed to these hippies that hadn't really grown up with something that had left the spiritual impression that they were looking for. And so that also leaves you very susceptible, obviously. But that's how it all started. And then slowly, as power and ego and money and control went to the leader's head, that's when things slowly started to turn into this dichotomy of abuse and torture and unsubtle. But my parents were already too far in, and the other members were too already, you know, they were already brainwashed. They had bought in to what Cult Man was selling, which was that we were a chosen special people and that we had to remove ourselves and isolate ourselves in order to continue the mission of this chosen people. Right. So that's in a nutshell how it happened and how it became what it did.
And what was the mission? Do you know what the mission was?
Well, the mission was that we were followers of the Lord Jesus Christ and that we couldn't be like people of the world because they were of the world, that we had to be different. We had to look different. We spoke different. We couldn't partake in things of the world because we were different, because we were chosen, because we shouldn't allow ourselves to be tainted in that way, right? We were not no longer of the world. we were chosen, we were different, we were therefore all these rules and regulations that we had to follow in order to continue to be that chosen, you know, sect.
And how do you think, I mean, if we call him Cult Man in the book, obviously no names, but how do you think he was so good at turning what started as a nice thing into abuse, torture, isolation, you know, controlling with, like, how do you think someone, I don't know if you know the answer, but gets so good at that, that people follow him blindly despite the abuse?
Well, I think that it takes a certain personality, right? It takes certain unbalances. You know, narcissism for sure was something that he portrayed, sociopath tendencies. There was a lot of things that probably played into, but I think the biggest thing that played into it was that the members put him on a pedestal. We rose him to this godlike figure that we honored and we revered, and we, you know, we placed him on that. So you can't help but to let that go to your head, right? Like, you can't blame him for being like, oh, well, you put me up here, so I'm going to use it to, you know, to the full extent of the position.
Wow. All right. So when you were growing up, obviously you didn't live at the, what do you call it?
The compound.
But so you had a sort of regular life outside of it, right?
Right. So I did not move into the compound until I was 18. So between birth and 18, I lived with my parents mostly. I did spend some summers at the compound, as I share in my book. But mostly I lived with my parents either in Minnesota on a small farm, or then we also moved to North Carolina when I was 12. And so I had more of a normal life in North Carolina because we weren't making those weekend trips to the compound every single weekend like we had when I lived in Minnesota. So I had more of what you would consider normal, but yet there was nothing, there was no normal to it. Even living in North Carolina, everything was still controlled by Cult Man. He was still very intertwined in our very beings, in our family dynamics, and me personally being somebody that he had chosen at a very young age. So there was a lot of dynamics that shifted and allowed for some normalcy. Like, I went to public school, but I lived two completely different lives, and my lives didn't intersect much because I had to keep them separate.
Mm, that must have been stressful, right?
Fight or right? Flight.
Yeah. Oh my God. So, all right. Now, did you ever, until the end, did you ever doubt that this was something that wasn't okay?
No. And no. Even at the end, I didn't, because it's all I knew, Hillary. It's all I knew. And when it's all you know, you have nothing to compare it to. Right. And so when I made the choice to escape at age 25, it wasn't because I thought that it was bad. I just knew that I wanted out, and I wanted to go be with my sister who I had found on the outside, and I had found out she was pregnant, and I wanted to go home to be with her so that I could be in my niece or nephew's life. So I wasn't even making a choice at that point that it was like, oh, I'm in a cult. That didn't hit me for several years after my escape.
Wow.
That's how brainwashing works. That's how control works. That's how fear works. Like, you can't see past what you know or what you have been taught. And no matter how uncomfortable it gets, until you start questioning those things, you can't see past it. And so it took me a few years to really start questioning it. And, you know, as my family started getting out and we all started collectively questioning it, and then once you realize it, then it's a smack in the face because it feels like your whole life has been a lie. It feels like you've wasted so much time and so much pain and so much trauma and so much angst over something that was a lie. And that feels like your whole identity crashes in on you. And that's what happened to me, is literally my whole identity crashed in on me.
Wow. So I remember, like I was there, when from the book, when you tried to escape that first time with the guy, and then you realized he was not good, and you went back, and that's when there was a bunch of abuse, but you took it because you deserved it, right? And you really believed that, right?
I did. I thought it was my penance for running away. I thought it was my penance for wanting the world and wanting freedom and wanting something outside of the compound. Like I really felt like I had sinned against Cult Man and that this was my penance. And so, yeah, I thought I deserved it. And
Wow.
it was horrid, as I talk about in the book, right? Like I had my head shaved 15 times, like a woman shaves her legs, not just a buzz cut, like shaved. And 15 times for 15 months, every single month, my head was shaved. All my things were burnt. I literally started my life over and had to lie to the exterior world about what was going on. People thought I had cancer. People thought I was dying. People thought like there was so much going on at that time that I couldn't talk about because I was in college at the time, and I'm dealing with people on the outside that know nothing about my inside world. And it was a trying time for sure, but I had gotten so good at lying to the exterior world about what was going on. People thought I had cancer. People thought I was dying. People thought like there was so much going on at that time that I couldn't talk about because I was in college at the time, and I'm dealing with people on the outside that know nothing about my inside world. And it was a trying time for sure, but I had gotten so good at lying to the exterior world about what was going on. People thought I had cancer. People thought I was dying back to the compound. So yes, I thought that that was my way back to God, my way to be forgiven, my way to be cleansed. That was definitely what I thought.
Now, okay. When you say, so the mission was like you were the chosen, you were special, and it was about God, right? Or Jesus. But did you ever say, okay, but you're not them? Or was he like the messenger? Like, how did he fit into that?
He was the intercessor. Like we didn't know, or I didn't know. I don't know about other members, but this is the way that it was taught to me, that he was like our intercessor. You went to him and he took it to God, right? So that he was your way to forgiveness, to enlightenment, to anything and everything. You had to go through him in order to get God's blessing or
Wow.
God's provision. Or God's understanding or wisdom, right? It had to go through him and he would filtrate and he would intercess for you.
And do you think he believed that?
100%.
Okay, so he
100%.
didn't think he was conning you, like he fully believed it.
Yes.
But just saying, if God's a loving God, why would he have him torture you? Do you know what I mean? Like, or is
Oh,
that was that not in the
all
equation?
this makes logical sense right now when
Now,
you're on the outside, but when
right.
you're in it and you know nothing else to compare it to, the logic is out the window.
Right, okay.
Because I
And what
had
about
no identity, which mean I had no autonomy to think for myself, to ask questions. And we were taught if we asked questions, that means our heart was not in the right, it was not in the right way for God.
Wow. That's amazing, right? It's amazing. I mean, but I guess he had years to perfect this, right? He didn't start out
Absolutely.
that way, but then he got really good. So now, what about your parents who had been in the other world before this? I mean, I know you said that they didn't know what was going on because you hid it so well, right?
So my parents were part of it, so they saw parts of it. They didn't see, once I moved to the compound, they did not know the goings on. They didn't know about the beatings. They didn't know about the starvation. They didn't know about some of the specifics, but they saw my head shaved. They saw all of my things burnt. But again, they were so brainwashed into that I had brought this on myself and that he was trying to make amends for me, right? He was trying to bring me back to salvation.
He was helping you. He was helping you. Okay. So that's how. So it was just the brainwashing so that you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about when you were like the guy who, when you were young, like 12 or something, and the guy that used to come to the farm and sexually abuse you?
So he was from the outside. He was not part of the cult. And that was, I was barely 10 when that started. And he worked for my dad. And that was my first experience of abuse. And I think because I had no identity anyway, that I craved this attention. And so even if it was bad attention, I was craving this attention. You know, I had so many brothers and sisters and we were in a big family and attention was hard to come by. And I also had learning disabilities and I was kind of the black sheep anyway. So when this abuse started happening, I knew, like, fundamentally I knew it was wrong and I knew it hurt and I knew it disgusted me, but I didn't know what to do with it, right? Like, I didn't know that I could go to my parents. I didn't know that I could confide in a sibling. Like, that never even crossed my mind because I just knew that it wasn't going to come out in my favor, right? Like, it would have been turned around on me and somehow it would have ended up being my fault. And I somehow knew that as such a small kid.
And how would it have been? Well, obviously he would say you asked for it or right. You were dirty right. Or whatever.
Right. Wow. All of that. Just like he did when I was 12 and the event that I talk about in the book about when I was abused by somebody from the group and he, you know, puts us down next to him and he asks for details. And it was just, he was so twisted and he was so interested in the most disgusting details of the abuse that, you know, we should have seen it then how vile he was. But again, we thought he needed the information in order to have us forgiven, in order to make amends, in order to take it to, it's all part of his sick psychosis.
Wow. And how many people were following him?
You know, at any time during my 25 years that I was there, it's between 200 and 300. It's still going on today. And there's probably still over 100 because now we have a whole nother generation since I've left. So, you know, we are only guesstimating what's actually left. I still have one sister there. But there's still a lot of people that are still being hurt and he's still continuing to manipulate what he teaches. They've gotten rid of Jesus Christ altogether. That's not part of his what he's sharing any longer and what he's feeding people. So he's controlling through a whole new doctrine that we never heard anything about when I was there. So but they're just so deep in that they're not questioning anything that because like my sister, she's been there, you know, almost 50 years now.
50 years. Wow. And how old is he now? He must be getting up.
He's in his 80s.
Wow. You know, it's just amazing that, well, I guess if you're a sociopath and a narcissist, you don't have any guilt and you don't have any qualms, but the fact that someone, you know, it's like an evil genius that you can twist this tale that so many people believe and don't question, you know?
Leading blindly, right?
It's quite frightening, really, that someone, if you look at any of the demonic, you know, Hitler or anyone that people just blindly follow
right.
and don't.
But the scarier thing is that this is one, right? There are 3,000 cults just in the United States alone. that means there are a lot of people that are following blindly to somebody of this caliber, if not worse, right? And that's what's scary. And that's why I'm on this mission of bringing awareness and bringing understanding to brainwashing, to control, to isolation, and letting people know that they're not alone, because there's a lot of people with my story out there. And the harder part is that people don't know how to talk about it yet, because we still feel a little bit circus freakish when we say we're from a cult, because it's just not super mainstream yet, right? And so it's that's my whole purpose of being open to talking about all of it, is because there's others out there that inevitably are also struggling.
So if somebody was still, you know, like someone like your sister, still in there, still believing it, I mean, do you feel like your job is to get them out, or do you feel like your job is to heal the people who have somehow made it out?
So my job is to help bring resources and healing to the people that have made it out, because we cannot intercede and save somebody from their journey. So until they make the choice to leave, until they make the choice of getting out, I don't feel like I'm a savior, right? Like I can't go save people. But once they make the choice to get out and they start looking for community, they start looking for resources, they start looking for healing, then I'm here. And that's the people that I want to surround myself with, because those are the people that I wish I had 20 years ago when I got out, when I was lost, when I was alone, when I felt abandoned. Because I had no identity. I did not know who I was. And it's been a painful uncovering of figuring out who I was and who God created me to be. But it's so powerful once you do the work. And so I feel like it's my mission to save people time and help them kind of with the roadmap of saying, no, healing is, you can get to a place where you can experience healing. And allow me to show you, right? Let me save you years from the years that I wasted and tried, you know, having to navigate this on my own.
And how, I mean, let's say this existed when you got out, how would you have found it? I know that was probably almost pre-internet, when the internet was new, but like, how would people even know that you exist?
And that was the exact issue with when I got out, right? The internet wasn't what it is now. Netflix wasn't what it is now. Hulu, right? Like, we have so much more technology than we did 20 years ago. And so everything's at our fingertips now. That's why my journey has been such, right? It's been like I've had to navigate on my own. I had to become my own health advocate. I had to become my own wellness advocate. I had to figure this out on my own. Now we have all this technology. We have these you know, shows like yours. We have podcasts. We have the internet. We have Facebook groups. We have all of these ways to connect with like-minded people or people that have experienced the same things we have. All we have to do is type, right? Like, and we can, all different resources pop up. And that's my heart, right? That's why I'm sharing on all these different platforms, is to bring awareness and let people get my face out there, get my story out there, to say, you're not alone. I went through it too. And now we can collectively figure out ways to heal.
Okay. So if people want to find you, they go to cult-ex.org, right?
No, it's cult-ex.
cult-x.org. Okay, good. I'm glad you corrected me. Good. And what will they find there when they go?
So I am creating a platform that will support the community of cult survivors and or other high control group survivors. And when I talk about high control group survivors, you can have a high controlled marriage. You can have a high controlled family. Right. So what I'm talking about and creating community around are those that have survived those types of things: brainwashing, manipulation, control, isolation, narcissism, all of those things that feed into a cult or a high control group. I'm creating a platform and a community for people to join, to be part of, to grow with, to find resources in, to find healing circles in. And I'm also creating events to facilitate these healing retreats and workshops for other groups, for other survivors. And you can find that all at the Cult X.
Okay. Cult-X.org. Okay. Now, what if someone, you know, let's just say they're in a high controlled marriage or relationship, but they don't know it. And they feel like they're going to be disloyal, you know, like they want to get out, but you know, I talked to a therapist for 40 years. And he said that like the people that are abused, when they get out, they miss it. Like they actually get bored, you know, there's no drama, there's no abuse, there's no nothing. And it's really hard for them to like a lot of them go back.
It's hard on your nervous system. And I talk about this in my book, how I created chaos in my marriage. I created chaos. You know, my husband was loving and supportive and, you know, understanding. And I created chaos because I had never been safe in 27 years at that point. I'd been running my entire life. And so suddenly, for the first time in my life, I was safe. I was secure. I didn't have to run, but I didn't know how not to. So I created chaos in my own life. And there's an old saying that says, you know, you're the known uncomfortability or pain is easier than the unknown happiness, right? Yeah. Like you don't know what you're stepping into, but you know what you're used to and you know what you've been through and you know that you've survived that. So it's easier to stay in that than it is to create the new, because the new is scary. The new is unknown. The new you've never done. And it's all psychological, right? It's literally mm-hmm. a psychological, like, mind boggle. Like, why would you choose anything other, right, than what you could have? But you don't, when you come from something like I have, you don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about what life would be like if you didn't have this. I never dreamt about my wedding. I never dreamt about life on the outside. I never dreamt about, you know, what would I be when I grew up? I never dreamt about these things that we talk to our own kids about now. I never had those ideas. I never had those thoughts. I never assumed I would have a life outside of the group, right? Like, that was my reality.
So when you were in high school and you would, you know, you would wear your uniform or whatever you call it and then go change and do other world stuff and then change before you came home. Like, what was that about, do you think? Because you were getting a taste of it.
I was rebelling. I wanted a little piece of the world. Like, I wanted to fit in with my friends in public school. I was sick of being the walking billboard, like, of like, you're weird, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to fit in with my friends. And I was a typical teenager that was just pushing boundaries. And I found ways to do that that allowed me to be a little rebellious, but not, you know, hopefully not get caught too often, right? And so I was just being a typical teenager. I was pushing boundaries. I was being rebellious. I was trying different things and I just wanted to fit in.
But did you know deep inside, like,
no,
that you were being bad?
No.
So when he found out, like, the time they couldn't find you and you had to come home and you had to have your conversation with him and you were punished, did you think you needed to be punished for that?
Yes.
You did. But you weren't thinking about that when you were doing it. You were just doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
But then afterwards you were like, oh yeah, I was
like
bad.
I talk about in the book, I kept two very separate lives. So when I was being rebellious, I wasn't being Cult Martha. Like, I was a completely different person and I kept those identities separate. And so when my worlds would collide, and I talk about this in the book, when my worlds would collide, I didn't know what to do, right? Like, I was a deer caught in the headlights because I was like, oh crap, now my world's just collided. Now I have to face the punishment from Cult Man or from my family or from my parents or whatever it was. And the same thing, like when my worlds would collide with people from the outside, usually a lie would get me out of that, right? Like I would just lie and figure out a way to move on. But the punishments were dire, and that was, yeah. But I didn't bring those worlds together. I very much kept separate worlds.
But you didn't lie to Cult Man, right?
No, I didn't know I could. I didn't know I could.
Wow. But you could lie to your parents.
That was not even a thought, because that was like, he was such a godlike figure that you wouldn't have dreamt about lying to him, because the punishment was too harsh. Like you wouldn't have dreamt of that. I didn't know I could. Yeah.
But even though the punishment was harsh,
yeah,
it would have been worse if he had caught you in a lie.
Absolutely.
But it was okay to lie to your parents, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They weren't God.
Wow. Woo! Okay. On that note, we're going to go to our commercial break, and then we'll come back with some more. This is amazing, right? Woo! Okay. Thank you. We'll see everyone in a few minutes.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to RealTalkWithHillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you'd like to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your classrooms, to your businesses, to your teams, go to KikoriApp.com and schedule a consultation. And just to promote my books, as usual, if you'd like to, I know it seems so mundane after what we're talking about, but this is my memoir about how I was actually being controlled and manipulated, and my book of how I got to be free from my own marriage. It's called The Second Piece of French Toast. If marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? And if you read it, you're not allowed to judge. It's a very courageous and honest book. Then we have the one in the commercial that you just saw, which is Real Talk. If you find yourself not speaking up, I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and didn't think I could speak up, didn't even know I wasn't speaking up. And once I started to, I realized, wow, life can really get good. So the subtitle is How to Say the Things You've Never Said so you can have the things you've always wanted. And you can go to RealTalkWithHillary.com. You can get the book. You can take the quiz to see if you're speaking up, and you can book time with me. And then the final, Your bullshit is your blessing. How to stop fixing yourself and start having fun. If you think there's something wrong with you and you've been spending years like I did trying to fix yourself, if only I could. Anyway, I finally realized, you know what? I'm okay. I'm not going to be different. I see things half empty. That's just the way it is. We get this and you can find them all on Amazon. And now we're going to go back to Martha Kartawi and get the rest of the story. So hello, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Wow. I mean, I know you couldn't see out. So, but when you look back, do you wonder, I guess you don't wonder how it happened because you know how it happened, right? But do you ever think you could have seen it during it, or it was just the way it was?
It was like just the way it was. Wow. Yeah. And I guess for me, I don't spend a lot of time looking back and asking how or why, because it changes nothing, right? Okay. And all it does is make you crazy. And it's the wish with, you know, the wish, a coulda, shoulda, and yes, that doesn't feed anything and doesn't help you move forward. So I don't spend a lot of time, you know, looking backwards, and I just focus on moving forward.
That's awesome. All right. And so your world really changed, I think, when you, well, when you met Papa, right? That was his name, Papa.
Yes.
But then, you know, you got out and you were, you know, struggling, and then you found the church, right? You ended up having walked and found yourself out of a church, outside of a church, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the day that you started saying, wow, I'm okay?
Well, it was all kind of happening and imploding at the same time. All of these, all of these different life events were kind of happening at the same time. But, you know, the event that you're talking about, when I found the church, I had started really, my physical body was breaking down. I was in a rough place in my marriage. My husband, I was finding, you know, ways to argue and cause chaos in my marriage. And there was this point where we are both are just like, we can't take anymore. We're either like, Martha needs to get help, or, you know, like, that's the point we were at. And I was, you know, angry at myself. I was, you know, I knew I needed help, but I didn't know where to go. And I started trying to get help. And then the first therapist that I talked to ends up telling me after four visits that she doesn't know how to help me. She's never dealt with somebody from a cult, and she doesn't know where to refer me. And she's so sorry and good luck. And that really derailed me. Like, that really derailed me again, because I'm like, see, I'm too broken even for professionals. And I remember like going home and sitting down with my husband and being like, see, like, I am that crazy. I can't be fixed. I'm stuck like this. Like, you're stuck with this, right? And I was trying to give him a way out, because I felt like I was that damaged that he was not going to be able to love me through this. But as, you know, as God would have it, I eventually found the beginning of my healing journey, which was through a continuing education for therapeutic massage. I'm a therapeutic massage therapist. And during that continuing education class, I was introduced to somatics, and it was talking about how trauma is stored on a cellular level. And literally when they said those words, and they started talking about this book called Body Keeps the Score, and like all these bells and whistles started going off. And I was like, that's me. My trauma must be stored on a cellular level. Like, how do I get to that level? How do I heal that trauma? Like, and that really opened up a whole new world for me. And for me, now I had something to call it, right? Because I was being bounced around the healthcare system from neurologists to gastroenterologists to hormone doctors to, like, I had all of these diagnoses, PTSD, fibromyalgia, migraines, chronic back pain, chronic, you know, all of this litany of diagnoses, because all the healthcare was looking at me from their scope of practice. So if you went to the, you know, to the orthopedic doctor, they were looking at my back. If I went to the neurologist, they were looking at my brain, and they were looking at my, you know, like, they, nobody was looking at the whole picture of, like, this is a damaged little girl caught in an adult sized body that has no identity, doesn't know who she is, doesn't know where she came from, and doesn't know how to move past what she's been through. Right. And that's what the somatics class opened up for me. Mm. And I was like, okay, if I'm not going to get the help, where am I going to get the help? And I started finding alternative medicines like EMDR, hypnosis, you know, cranial sacral therapy, Reiki, all of these different alternative, you know, and holistic approaches to healing trauma and going inward and getting to that place where I could find an identity, where I could really uncover who it is, who was Martha. And I remember that process. I mean, it was painful because you have to relive some of the crap you've been through. But when I got to that gem of who Martha was and who I was created by God to be, like, that was like, what? Like, it was so amazing and powerful. And I remember, like, the first time I was able to look at the mirror and I didn't hate myself because I could look at myself and see who God created me to be. Not the damaged person with the labels, with the things that the cult had told her she was, that Cultman had branded me with. I was able to peel back all of those things and be able to look at this woman in the mirror in her 30s now, whose life had been taken from her. And I was able to say, I love you and I'll do whatever it takes to continue to heal you because you're worth it.
Wow.
And that was powerful.
When did you realize that you had trauma?
I think around that same time is when I realized in the somatics class that all of the things, I never ran from my abuse. I knew that that was part of my past. But I didn't realize how traumatic it had been because you segment and compartmentalize all your trauma just to exist, right? Because you can't carry it all around in your backpack because it becomes too heavy and crippling. So I had compartmentalized different parts of my life just to survive. So I'd packed away all of the trauma in different drawers of my life. And so I had to uncover all of those things in order to heal.
And as you did, the physical problems went away, right?
Yes. And that's the beauty of really getting back to who you were created to be, is that my physical ailments were actually outward manifestations of an inward problem. Mm. My inward problem was all of my trauma. My inward problem was all of the control, the brainwashing, all of the things that had happened to me those first 25 years. The outward was just a manifestation of my body, mind, and spirit trying to get my attention and trying to say, Martha, like, you got to stop and you've got to focus and you've got to go backwards in order to move forwards.
Wow. So, okay. So let's talk about how you're helping others and how, what you're doing, how they can find you, you know, the retreats that you're leading and all that, so that people know if they've been through the same thing, maybe they're, you know, just out and they're struggling, you know, obviously they can find you on the website, but, you know, just what can, yeah go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm doing a lot of things. My mission is really to help people feel less lonely, whatever their background is, whether it's a cult, whether it's a high control group, or whether it's other types of trauma, because trauma is trauma and pain is pain. And there is no like continuum that says, well, your trauma is this bad and my trauma is this bad, right? Trauma is trauma and pain is pain. So I just want to be a voice for the voiceless. I want to help those that are stuck get unstuck. I want to help those that are alone to feel less alone. Those are my missions, right? And how I'm doing that is I'm a speaker. You know, of course, I'm also the author of Going All In, Glory Going All In. And also I create healing circles and healing retreats for people from high control groups or from cults. I also do it on a coaching level, right? I coach groups, I coach individuals, and I really cater the coaching plan, the retreat to the individuals that I'm serving. And that is the beauty of the things and the healing journey that I've been through, is that I have acquired so many resources along the way. And that has built up my own tool belt, but now I'm able to easily access those, and I'm able to easily share those things. So if you're interested in having me speak or having me create a retreat or a workshop or a circle, please reach out on social media or reach out via my website.
Okay. And how do they find you on social media?
Social media. It's all Martha Kartawi.
Okay. Okay.
On Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, all Martha Kartawi.
Okay. And it's Kartaoui.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. In case they don't know how to spell it. All right. Awesome. And when you say you've acquired resources, what do you mean by that? You mean people? You mean tools? Yeah.
Yes. All of the above, right? Like the resources that I'm talking about are the holistic paths that I took to find my own healing, but I've also created workbooks. I've also created meditations. I've also created, so I have tools that I've created on my own, but I also have places to direct people to find the healing that they need, or to try some of these holistic therapies that I talk about in my book that worked well for me. And just to be a voice to bounce things off of, right? And to be a resource to bounce things off of. I wish that I had had somebody like me that was able to say, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, here's where I am. Like, what can you advise, right? That is money. I wish that I had that during my healing.
Now, for someone, I mean, I know they could Google. Let's say they're just fresh out of the cult. Do you think they would trust? Do you know what I mean? Like, having been, like, how do you trust? I'm not saying you're not trustworthy, but like, if you had just come out and someone said, hey, I can help you, would you have trusted them? You know,
That's a valid question. And I've actually had people that have seen me on a podcast, have seen me on a TV show, or have read my book, that have reached out to me and said, holy crap, I would never have said that I was in a cult until I heard you, or until I read your book. And that to me is why I'm doing this, is because I've had people that didn't even recognize that what they were in was a cult. And then when they had that light bulb moment, then they couldn't unlight bulb, right? Like, couldn't shut it off, because they're like, holy crap, that my family was right, or my friend was right. It is a cult. It was a cult. I was part of a cult. And when I get people that say those things to me, or I have people saying like, thank you for being my voice, I experienced so many of the similar things. I've been out for 30 years, but I've never told anybody.
Wow.
I can't imagine the shame, the fear, the guilt that they've been carrying around most of their life because they're too scared to share. So these are the stories, and these are the testimonies that I have heard since putting out my book and becoming public, where people are saying, thank you. Thank you for being the voice. Thank you for bringing awareness. Thank you for opening my eyes, right? Like, that's why I'm doing this.
So the shame and the fear and the guilt, is it because they don't want to admit that they fell for it? Or like, what is that about?
Many times, if they weren't born into it, yes, they're ashamed. They're ashamed that they fell for it. They're ashamed that they wasted their time or their money or their resources or whatever it is, right? They're ashamed of that. Or they're ashamed because somebody told them not to, or somebody tried to get them out sooner, or, you know, there's all these reasons why we carry around shame or guilt or fear. Like when I first got out, I didn't want to talk bad about Cult Man because I still believed that he was God and I would have to pay for that. So I didn't want to talk about him. I stayed in fear for years before I regained my, like, I let the fear go and regained my own identity and said, no, What he did was evil. What he continues to do is evil. And I'm going to stand up for righteousness. I'm going to stand up for others. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to say, no, I'm going to be the voice. But it took me years, Hillary.
And what finally had you, do the switch in your mind from savior or intercessor to evil? What was the thing that had you finally see it?
I think the final thing was when I realized the depths of deceit and the depths that he had gone to try to break me, when I finally understood that. And that only came when I started my healing journey and I had to go backwards and I had to go and I had to face the demon that was him. Mm. And that's when I realized that this was never good as far as I was concerned, right? Like this had always, him choosing me at such a young age, taking interest in me at 7 years old, trying to groom me for something that I never ended up becoming for him because I was this defiled, rotten, whatever, right? But he was trying to groom me at such a young age.
For what though?
I'll let you just, yes. Yeah.
Were there other people that were being groomed too?
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
Wow. And before we start wrapping up, your parents, did they, I know when you finally told your father what had happened and you said he believed you, was he horrified?
Yes.
Or, yes.
And that was the impetus of why they got out. Is because he did believe me. And he was like, this is not what we signed up for. That was when his light bulb went off. And he was like, this is not what we signed up for. This is not what we thought, we had left you in the custody of Cult Man because we thought that was for your highest good. And like, they hadn't dreamed that the things that had happened to me had happened to me. And that was their impetus for leaving.
And did they apologize?
I think that it took a long, long, long time, but I think because you go into recovery mode, right? Like they got out and now they have to rebuild their life and they're trying to rebuild their life with their children that they know very little about, right? Oh, yeah. Like we all were trying to rebuild our lives at the same time. And three of my brothers were heavy into drugs by then because they were numbing from their own experiences. Oh. So there was just, we were all lifing and we were all just trying to survive. And so it would take a long time for anybody to have space and understanding of forgiveness and or all of those things.
Wow. Whew. All right. So I give you a lot of credit and thank you for your courage and for what you're doing for other people. Let's say, looking out 5 years, and you can fulfill your mission and, heal people and all that. How do you see, you could say the big world or you could say that world. How do you see things? What would be your dream or your goal or something?
My biggest dream is just to leave this world better than I found it. And I want to use my experiences. I want to use my trauma and my pain to bring purpose, to bring passion, and to bring awareness to everything that I do. And I know that my story is not in vain because every time that I get to share it on any type of platform, somebody reaches out and says, thank you. Somebody reaches out and says, I wasn't in a cult, but I know what it's like to have a manipulative father or to have a manipulative spouse or to be controlled, right? So I know that I'm in my mission. I know that I'm doing what I'm called to do, and I'm using my past to create purpose in this world and to leave it better than I found it.
Wow. And then, so once again, people can find you at cult-x.com. And yes. When's going to be your next retreat? Do you have it scheduled or anything if people want to join you?
So right now I'm setting up private retreats. And so people can reach out to me and ask for more information, and I can, but they're all, when you're dealing with cults, some cults don't want exposure from the outside. So I have to be very careful about how I create these groups. And then some will be open to the outside. So reach out to me, start a conversation. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to talk more about your own needs.
Okay. And then the best way is through your website. There's a place for them to contact
you. Yep. Or social media. Social media is also a great way to find me and to start a conversation. Yep.
Okay. So you're on, say it again,
Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Yep. Or they can email me at martha@cult-x.org. Whatever works.
Okay. Awesome.
I'm available.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your courage. Thank you for your generosity. Thank you for your, you know, for just being real. And that's what the show is all about. You know, it's making the world a better place. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the platform, and thank you for your generosity in sharing it. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.